Thursday nights at 7 on SDPB-TV, Dr. Holm, otherwise known as the Prairie Doc, gives you a show called On Call with the Prairie Doc. Tonight, the topic is Ask Anything About the Prevention of Common Maladies. Dr. Holm joins us today from the Janine Basinger studio on the campus of the South Dakota State University. Dr. Holm, welcome.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for inviting me. Yep.
Absolutely. This should be fun because what I did is I reached out to some colleagues and some friends, and we're just going to kind of ask Dr. Holm anything. So I hope you're ready.
Great. I'm ready.
All right. First off, what do you say to people, Dr. Holm, when they tell you that they're having difficulty sleeping through the night? Could that be an age thing? Does the body need more or less sleep as we get older? What's the deal there?
It's old data in the 80s and 90s that showed that 80% of the people who have sleeping trouble are struggling with some form of depression or anxiety. And I think the vast majority of time it is depression. Anxiety really is a manifestation of the blues. Now, people say that's a natural thing because the blues drives us to make changes in our lives, move forward, go west, young man, you know, those whole things. But it's awful not being able to sleep. I've struggled with some of that in my last years of my life, and I just generally roll over and read my book until I'm kind of gorked out, and I could see I'm losing my sleepfulness, or I'm losing my wakefulness, and so I go put it down. I'm okay. It works for me. Mm-hmm. Often I'll help people with an antidepressant. I'll never use a benzodiazepine sleeping pill like Ambien because that seems to worsen the problem over the long run. The short run is the better shot at it. So the medicines that I use, if I use medicine, is in the antidepressant group. Trazodone is a good choice, which is mostly an antidepressant medication.
As I've personally have gotten older, it feels like my body needs less sleep. Now, I would think that would just be the opposite. Is there any data that proves that it's either wrong or right, one way or the other?
Chris, your body is correct. People lose sleep as they get older. And usually when we wake up the first time or the second time, you know, in the morning hours, it's time to get up. Some people just get up at 5 and go have coffee. I usually recommend that trying to lay there in bed and toss and turn and da-da-da is not a good idea. There's a whole thing you can go to the internet and look up sleep hygiene. I think that's a really good idea. Get the TV out of the bedroom, make the room a little cooler. Mm-hmm. You don't need to do that recently. Over the last 2 days, our bedroom is a little bit too cool. Right. And I think a regular exercise program is probably the most important thing of all. You know, if you can just every day get a mile of walking every day, it'd be great.
Next topic, let's move on to HDL, or high-density lipoprotein, which is also known as good cholesterol. When these numbers come back from our physicians, one wants to see a higher number, and that's opposite the bad cholesterol. My thought, Dr. Holm, is how does one raise that number? I know people that struggle with that low number there.
I recently read an article maybe a year ago that said no correlation with HDLs and protection. As opposed to what we used to think. The idea is that cholesterol reflects a big part of our cardiovascular risk is, I think, in error. You can have high LDLs and not have a heart attack, or low LDLs and have a heart attack. You know, the correlation of risk is not as good as we'd think it would be. And so I think pharmaceutical industry is really happy about the medical world chasing cholesterol levels, whether they're HDL, LDL, you know, all those different kinds. I think the most important thing is you eat correctly, which is mostly vegetables, less amounts, and if you're going to avoid things, avoid the sugars. Eat correctly. The most heart-protective thing to do is less calories. Count your calories if you want to get into doing something. A glass of wine is by the women's study, way more protective than any cholesterol drug, lowering drug, unless you have an alcohol problem. And so alcohol can be dangerous to your health, so don't go there if you have an alcohol problem. But a glass of wine is good. So I think my answer to you is HDL is typically raised by exercise, mm-hmm. but don't count it. Count the number of HDL. Just go get the exercise because that's the most important thing you can do.
you referenced LDL. Now, that's the bad cholesterol, if you want to call
it. Yeah, the low-density lipoprotein. That's been touted as the major risk factor. It's not. It's just one factor. The correlation. If you do a test that correlates well with an illness, then, wow, you've got a really good test. Lipid studies are not a really good test.
To get a true cholesterol number, do they take the two numbers together and do something medically with them, or are they just polar opposites of each other?
No, I think that I've seen people use numerical, mm-hmm. Formulas and all that. It's relatively much ado about nothing. Mm. Do the right thing, lifestyle. Most of this cholesterol banter has been promoted by the pharmaceutical industry.
Now, this may tie into our first thought as we move on. We're talking to Dr. Holm, the Prairie Doc. His show's on tonight at 7 o'clock Central Time on SDPB-TV. What's the cause and maybe even the prevention, if you will, of eyelids that seem to twitch from time to time, just randomly?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. I don't have a great answer, Chris. Mm-hmm. I've seen that my eyelids twitch when I'm drinking way too much coffee.
Oh, of course.
It's associated with adrenaline levels sometimes. I don't have a good answer. I wish I did. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's, I see that muscles twitch sometimes when people over-exercise, and if people are, crunching their eyebrows or eyelids, maybe that's part of it. I don't have a good answer. Good question.
Well, maybe next time we'll meet. Maybe you've done some research between now and then. We'll talk about that sometime. With the cold weather, we'll move on. It's been lingering around these days. Sinus headaches seem to be an issue with some. What can one do to assist in preventing sinus headaches in this cold weather?
I think the majority of sinus headaches are really migraine headaches. Mm-hmm. We've had a number of shows. You can go to prairiedoc.org and look up the migraine headache shows with Carol Nelson or mm-hmm. Carol Miles a couple years before. Carol Nelson is just fabulous, and the story of what brings on a migraine headache is unbelievably interesting and powerful. A lot of it has to do with withdrawal of Tylenol or withdrawal from ibuprofen or from headache medicines. Some of it has to do with not enough sleep or too much sleep. Some of it has to do with lack of regularity. Some of it is menopausal. It's really complex, but most of these severe sinus headaches are not sinus. An antibiotic isn't going to help you. When you get a cold, you feel lousy. If you're blowing your nose, you ram that stuff in there, and sometimes you can pack it with blowing your nose a lot. So I would avoid blowing the nose. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the time, it's also, just the humidity and the cold. And, not an easy question. It's a very, very challenging question, and there's too many answers for it to sound like I've got a great answer.
Sure. Now the rumor on the street is, and my colleague Steve Zwimke and I were talking this morning, that somebody mentioned to him that if you're outside, you shouldn't really even do a lot of talking in this cold weather. I'm assuming that has to do with breathing in that cold air.
I always love to promote talking. I think it's the most important brain exercise you can do. They always say do these puzzles and all that stuff.
Right.
A good conversation is hard to beat. Not the weather, da-da-da, but, a nuanced conversation about a book that you've read or a friend that you have that you're concerned about or whatever it might be. But a conversation is very complex brain activity. I hate to discourage it ever. Mm-hmm. Exercising outside when the weather is above zero is fine. You just got to bundle up. If you go below zero, you can hurt your body. Mm-hmm. And I would say primarily when it's below zero, just be careful to try to get there quickly without hurting yourself. I've never heard this talking, but mm-hmm. most of the time I'm just scrambling to get inside somewhere when it's below zero. I think we've got to be really careful this kind of weather. But mostly, the most dangerous thing that we run into in this kind of weather is ice, because people fall and break their hips.
Sure.
And that kills people.
Now, I know you're not an optometrist by trade, but this really interests me. Well, they all do, but what do you know about ocular migraines? A friend of mine the other day had a short 10-minute stint of what he called distorted vision, and he described it to me as including a bunch of lines, kind of like kaleidoscopic vision minus the colors. Are these related, or was this a fluke situation, or what happened here?
No, he was having a migraine headache, and it's called a prodrome, and it was no question about it. You see that before migraines. You know, I used to think I had the answer what migraines were, and I've touted it through the years, and then Carol Nelson has taught me otherwise. I don't know we don't really know how they work. You know, constriction of blood vessels, dilation of blood vessels, but they give you those kinds of weird things. Now, ocular migraines is another story. Mm. That's when your vision has been distorted by whatever, and glasses that realign your eyes better take away headaches in some people. Mm. And Carol Nelson has been involved with that. A number of the ophthalmologist groups have been working on that. And so that's a real deal. But it's different than a migraine headache.
Okay.
Which can give you these ocular signs that you described.
But there was no pain associated with this. It went away in 10 minutes. It was like it just never happened.
Yeah, it was a migraine headache without the headache.
No kidding.
It was a real migraine headache without the headache.
No.
Isn't that interesting?
That's the first time that's ever happened to him. Is that possible? I mean, it'll probably happen again, you suppose?
I don't know.
I mean, you know, one never knows.
That's a good question. You know, I know for sure, headaches in my 30s and 40s when I mm-hmm. would be down at the restaurant where I'd go and I'd drink too much coffee. That triggers it sometimes. And it was winter and I had a cold. That triggers it sometimes. It isn't the cold. It isn't the sinus. It's mm-hmm. a migraine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have one eye that the lid would droop because it hurt so bad.
Mm.
And then it would go away. And you know, I rarely did anything about it. It just was gone by the time I left the restaurant. I was trying to read and study and that type of a thing back then.
With all of that said, then, he doesn't need to rush to his doctor or his eye doctor and they lay. Like,
No real scare. No, I would just see if they start coming back. If they come back regular, go to your generalist, your internist or your primary care family physician or one of those people.
We've got a couple of minutes left, Dr. Holm. Give us a good one that you've heard lately that didn't really stump you, but was a great question from a patient of yours.
Hmm.
Or maybe two, whatever you got.
Well, I like the question you posed about nursing homes earlier. You know, it's huge. We're losing our nursing homes in a time when we need them. Mm-hmm. Hello, we need more Medicaid funding. Now, we could take it from the national government. You know, that's a solution that's easy. You get more money from the national government. Second answer is yes, whatever you have to do to save them permanently. We need those nursing homes in those communities. Mm-hmm. It's a major industry for the community, but that's not it. It's people that need those nursing homes. We can't afford to lose the nursing homes. Another question that people talk about, and you talked about it earlier, was suicide, and people have asked, what can you do to prevent a person from committing suicide? And the answer is to be a friend and listen, care. It's amazing how important care, listening and caring can be. You know, what is a friend? That is a person who listens and cares. And many of these people feel isolated, have no friends. A friend is an important entity indeed. So there was my best answers for you.
On Call with the Prairie Doc can be seen Thursday nights at 7 Central on SDPB-TV. Dr. Holm, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for the education.
Thank you, Chris.